We're back, hour three, on this Wednesday, and I'm sure that Ron McQuett would much prefer that I call him on Monday, next Monday, to talk about, ideally, Whitmore winning the count fleet. But Ron had seen the conversation from the weekend regarding hidden scroll bleeding and bleeding visibly. And really each weekend that this season has been unfolding, there's been either reports, open reports of bleeding incidents, and then there's also sort of the backstretch conversation that so and so all bled and that are going underreported. Ron, hate that this is the reason we're calling, but I know you had some thoughts. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
I'm good. And, before we do anything else, I'm gonna expect or hope that you got your vaccination out of the way.
I was lucky enough. I got my second vaccine shot the 30th. So they said another 10 to 12 days. So
right.
We just got a little bit more time for me to stay put up. And then I'm going to try to venture back into the world.
I was going to say, and of course, everybody, familiar, that even under pre-pandemic issues, Ron had to be very careful in terms of, immunology. And so for people like you, I've referenced you. I've referenced John Nichols, who's got one lung and had to be very careful with this. There were people that we were all aware of around the industry that had real there's a real danger. I mean, more than most. So good to hear that that part is. So this way we can take you to lunch and stuff in Louisville and as we get excited about Derby.
That sounds good to me. Everyone is 100% ready to get back to doing the things they love to do and spending time with their friends and being able to go and fellowship with people that love the sport like they do. And it's time. We're ready.
Without a doubt. And certainly as the, as the season, I can't say completely winds down because we do have another, several weeks at Oaklawn. Before we talk about the topic at hand, let's get some racing coverage in, too. You've had a very solid winter.
Yeah, we're going to come through Oaklawn very well. I'm pleased with what we've done here with the sampling of horses we have. I can tell you that looking from my fence, this meet is no joke. It's hard, and when you run well here, you've done something. And for the people that that look out and see the rest of the world getting all the publicity and stuff, and they know how hard it is here to do anything. I mean, I don't care if it's a maiden special, if it's a other than. I mean. And I know everybody's going to go to last year because it was a COVID situation where we had so many grade one winners come out of A other lands, but it's not easy to win a 62-50 bottom race here. So I'm pleased with what we've done, and I'm really proud with how strong the meet is that we were able to do it in.
Well, and I'm sure you're probably straddling the fence a little bit in terms of horses that are geared up for Kentucky assignments and at the same time some of the opportunities between now and Derby Day right there. How many horses are with you in Hot Springs versus how many back in Kentucky?
Well, we've started the migration to the 502 actually last week with going to Keeneland, and this next week we're going to Churchill. We'll end up having 90% of our horses will be in the state of Kentucky, and there isn't a better place to be in the month of May than in Kentucky. So we're trying to get back up there and be ready for Derby Week. All my owners want to do well, the week of Derby. It seems like if you win any race that week, you've done something that that makes the owners proud. So, and anytime you can do well at Keeneland, we're running today at Keeneland with one for Joe Ford in the West Rock stable, and we're going to try to do well there. And you know, that's my circuit is a circuit that is not a coincidence that it's where everyone loves racing, and you want to do well there.
Well, and you mentioned the one today, and in fact, I looked at that sequence, and that's a tough, crazy race. That optional claimer starter allowance, and you've got Ike in there, and it's kind of a funny group of horses that came together.
It is, and I looked at it and thought there could be any sort of winner. I mean, there's like five of them. If anyone says they could single that, I'd take my hat off to them. But you know, we're searching for a different distance. We don't believe that he liked the mile and 16th at Oaklawn as much, and we're trying to get to where we could get us a one turn, you know, hybrid route race, and you know, the Beard Course is the perfect solution to see if that works.
Well, the 7/8 for you on a turn back makes sense, and I don't know if it's the same scenario that we talk about sometimes, like at Saratoga, and they talk about it at Del Mar, but a Rad Ortiz hangs around to ride the nightcap, and you manage to lure Irad, so that'll certainly be a magnet for some players.
Well, the last time he rode for us was in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, so at that same track, and we it will not go unmentioned that I'll get the positive vibes there. So we're very fortunate to get him on any horse. You know, he's one of the guys that make a difference. There's a group of riders that are just seem to be, you know, whenever they get on your horse, there's some kind of magic, and he, along with several others, are one of those guys that you gotta handicap that in. And it's not always as well thought out as the gambling public might think, like, oh, this horse is live because Irad is on it. Well, it may very well be that the reason he's on this horse is because of what he did for us last November. And he's like, hey, I'm going to ride this horse over this one because maybe we could do business later. And, you know, somebody might be thinking, no, Irad loves this horse, and it could very, you know, I'm not saying it's not, it's just that everyone tries to guess why a big named rider would be on that type of horse, and I could just tell you there's a whole bushel of reasons why it could be.
Well, I'm certainly using them. I put them in there, and the Hiles runner with Miguel Mena was all right. Stay home, and there's that Kano part of the entry, long on luck. It's funny. You can tell by the morning line. You got 4-1s, 5-2, 4-1, 4-1, 7-2. It's kind of a hodgepodge feel to it. It's a tough, very tough nightcap. And actually, there's a similar condition that goes six as the sixth race too. A nice sequence, actually, a very bettable sequence that I'm going to talk about with Seth Merrow in a little bit. Ron, let's look ahead to the weekend at right now. We got the Arkansas Derby Day card set, and you know, your day centers certainly around Whitmore in the Count Fleet. You know, just got beat in the return race, but you know, certainly a good return effort.
I was very proud of how he ran in his race off the bench. You know, the horse that beat us is a classy horse. He was California's champion basically last year, with winning ran through all the sprint races and won them all out there.
Yep.
And I thought that, you know, whenever the trainer, Mr. Miller, ships out of California, he does it with a purpose, and we knew that he was going to be A, ready, and also wasn't going to be as subject to Snowmageddon that we went through. And when you run against a horse of that quality, against a trainer like that, you have to have everything going your way to win those races. And And we're not making excuses, but everyone knows what we went through here, and we're ready to see if we're ready to step up, and we're going to need to. I mean, it's not only our second race of the year, it's his, and then you've got, you know, Strike Power coming off of a big race, and you've got, you know, Empire of Gold, which was fourth in the Breeders' Cup, is going to be there. So this race has got three of the top four finishers in the Breeders' Cup, and then, oh, by the way, No Parole, which won a Grade One last year. And right. I mean, it's a race, you know. There's a bunch of really good horses in this race, and you're going to have to bring your A game to impose your will against these guys.
You're going to get a pace. There's certainly, you don't have to worry about him not getting something to run into.
Yeah, I think that it sets up for, you know, there's nobody in here that's just going to go to the front at all costs. I think that, you know, there's not a 30-to-1 shot that's going to sacrifice everything to go 21-1 and say he led at the quarter pole, you know. But there's plenty of honest pace. There's plenty of opportunity for tactical moves, and there should set up for someone that wants to hopefully have the right timing to close and get them down the lane. It should be a great race. It's the best sprint race run this year. And I believe that, I'm always tooting the horn of this race particularly should get more credit. There's no way that this race is a Grade Three and some of the other ones are Grade Ones. I'm sorry.
Fair point.
I've ran in it too many years. It's too tough. It's too tough. They got to look at it. Stop with the bias stuff. This race produces a lot of really good horses. And if you look at this field and you look at the field that run last week, and I'm not taking anything away from those, but if the credentials of today and the credentials of last year and the year before that doesn't show you which races should be switched between Grade Ones and Grade Threes, I don't know what would.
Fair point. You're obviously referencing, you know, Carter and Phoenix last week, and or not the Phoenix, the
the Commonwealth. The
Commonwealth
is
Thank
a
you.
Good race, and the Carter is a historic race that deserves the highest praise you can get. The past horses that won that race are unbelievable. But what I'm saying is maybe we need to figure out a different way to adjust these. I kept thinking every year, you know, when we won and we're on second to Roy H and we won the four go, I thought, well, they're going to move this up to a Grade Two. And then the next year we come back and we won again. And then we ran third to Roy H after winning the Phoenix and second in another race. And I thought, well, they'll look at it this year. Then Mitoli won it and won the Churchill Downs and won the Mile and won the Breeders' Cup, and I thought, well, for sure they're going to do it this year, and nothing. And then it comes back to next year, we win the Breeders' Cup, and, you know, we go on and you know, and then I look and see the horses that through the last 5 years, you know, okay, we don't get paid for what happened 10 years ago. We just don't. It's time for them to come up. You know, they're always wanting to change things and do things. Let's figure out a way to get the proper gradings on these races. Let's figure out a way to make sure that you get paid and acclimated for what you do and not for what somebody else did 10 years ago.
Well, and I don't know if Hammer's listening, but, you know, the person you can talk to right there in Hot Springs, Hammer will give you some, you know, some of the background on, you know, how the whole system works and how the Graded Stakes Committee goes about it.
One of the things that I always joke around with, and I'm from where I'm from in the world, and I look around and I see that there's not a lot of common sense employed in a lot of these decision making. It's so-and-so said this and this one said that, and right on to the issue that's happening today that's affecting our horses and more importantly our game. They're basically a lot of people are calling the shots and imposing their will that aren't necessarily as involved with the day-to-day and not knocking them. If you have the passion and you love my sport and my animal the way I do, then I'm on your side. And I don't like when we're divided over something that just seems to be, it seems to be that they're chasing the wrong thing.
Merge into this discussion, Ron. Yeah.
Yeah. First off, I'm a fan of horse racing. I'm a fan of horses. I grew up on the outside. My name isn't hanging on any barns, from three generations ago. I'm not a guy that was born into a spot. I didn't inherit a 30-horse barn when I started. I'm here because I want to be, even though common sense at the time would have told me to go do something easier. And I'm here for the love of the horse and the passion of the game. The thrill of winning a race means everything. And the thrill of helping a horse accomplish what it's bred to do and it wants to do, and to kind of be the protector of the horse, that's important. But to be vilified because we don't agree on something is playing into the hands of the people that want the sport to go away. Whenever somebody like me or anybody else that wakes up every day, employs people, and racetracks need us to help promote and produce horses for the races, to be able to have us just because we don't believe on one thing to be vilified if we don't want change, or we're trying to harbor cheaters, or we don't care about the sport. It's wrong. It's horse racing was basically done by two people that didn't agree. They both thought they had the fastest horse. And I can walk down the shed row of any barn in Kentucky and I'll see people feed different. I'll see people be on different bedding. I'll see people do different things when it comes to how fast they gallop or how slow they gallop or whatever. I see a lot of differences. But whenever you see people 99% of the time all agree that one thing is more important to have than not to have, it ought to tell you something. These aren't cheaters. These people that use Lasix to prevent their horses from bleeding or to try to prevent their horses from bleeding, they're not looking for an advantage. But this has been able to, most of the working people on the backside and the trainers, they sit back and they shut up and they do their job. And they let people that talk, people that write articles. And we're not good at that. But we're being painted as less than horsemen if we use Lasix. We're being painted as harborists of cheaters if we don't want our horses, or we want to prevent our horses from the prospect of bleeding. And it's not fair. It's very divisive, and it's very much what we don't need in this sport right now. I can think of, if you named off, say, you went down the list and you started from everybody from a hot walker to an owner of the Kentucky Derby and said, name five things that we need to work on to improve horse racing for the public and, more importantly, for the safety of horses, that one, the L word, wouldn't even come up. It wouldn't. There would be, safety is more of is something that we need to work on. There needs to be, we should say surveillance. We want surveillance. We want pre-testing. We want to know that, by the way, has anyone figured out a way to test for what maximum security used? I mean, we know for a fact you give it, and they still haven't figured out a way to find it in a test. But yet we're going after something that may shorten a lot of careers. And then, oh, by the way, the way they're doing it. So, okay, listen, we're going to breed stallions that bled and ran every race of their life with Lasix to 200 mares this year. But by the way, if you buy one of these babies for a lot of money, if it runs, then you just give it away. The end user is being punished. The gambler and the owner is being punished.
Correct.
Because someone wants to do a knee-jerk reaction and say, well, this is something. Well, I'm sorry. It's not the most important thing in our sport, not even in the top five.
Well, we were told, one thing you just said that really resonates to me is we heard the same refrain about steroids. When steroids were ushered out of the game, it was like, oh, the people don't want to bet because horses are on steroids, and the wagering will absolutely that's what's holding back the handle, and that was of course bullshit and complete nonsense. And it's the same thing here. We're in the same vein. And then, of course, the other part of the whole thing, that over the years we keep hearing about, oh, well, the rest of the world, as Sid Fernando just laid out, and as he laid out when he wrote that piece in 2019 that I circulated, we don't have an industry exactly like the rest of the world. Our horses compete virtually year round. They compete, 55 to 60% on dirt. They're housed in a different scenario with straw and hay above their heads. Their respiratory systems are under more duress than the rest of the world. What's the requirement that we be like the rest of the world? To me, that's like the craziest.
I couldn't say it any better. I'm telling you right now, whenever I hear that statement, is Europe doesn't do this or Australia doesn't do, I don't care. My job is to take care of my horses in my situation. And my situation is different from their situation. And, they are. They're not near as many trainers. There's not near as many races. They're primarily trained in lavish fields and lush meadows,
yep,
and training centers that's way away. We're trained in cities. There's nothing to compare us to. And why do we want to be them? Let's understand that we can respect the way they do it. They can respect the way we do it. It's not like that, we were talking about John's Causeway. It's not like when he come over, the first thing he didn't do was try to prevent his horse from bleeding. He ran with Lasix. It's a no-brainer. And more importantly, there's a very few vocal people that have a large audience that are basically the soundboard for this. And I respect anybody, and I respect their opinion, and they walked a different path than I did. And I I can appreciate their opinion. I just don't like it when it's forced on me, because they don't sleep where I sleep, and they didn't start where I started. And, we're trying to do things differently. I just want to know that the few elite isn't gonna ruin the game that I love by what I think is I really believe it's been a pet peeve issue of certain groups for a while. And I respect those groups. I think we need them. I think that, to paint the guys that stand up and say, well, let's ask a few questions. Well, did we do any data at all about the gambling public and say, hey, do you care if horses have Lasix or not? Have we asked breeders, are you guys ready to stop breeding the stallions that use Lasix? Are you? Or are you just going to make the end user take that shot? Are the breeders ready to give up those mares that ran without Lasix? Because there is a potential that they may produce horses that would do better with Lasix. Are we strong enough right now to go through what would happen if the people stopped buying these horses in the sale or stopped giving the money for them that they are used to getting? If the risk is that you can give $300,000 for a horse that's by a stallion that ran with Lasix and out of a mare that ran with Lasix, and oh, by the way, this horse needs Lasix, so sorry about your luck, you're going to have to find something else. Maybe he can be a jumper.
Well,
there's going to be some kickback somewhere.
Well, and what are you, you know, I brought this up with Brad Cox yesterday, because he now, and I feel horrible for Mark DeTample, who spent, you know, $500,000 on Hidden Scroll, and now he's going to be, you know, sidelined probably 75 to 100 days, and, you know, is going to need the hyperbaric so forth, that, you know, to try to mitigate the effect of you know, of the incident. What, you know, what is your preventive process? You know, there's going to be a point where undoubtedly you're going to have a stake runner that you're going to have to make a decision. I mean, what do you do with a horse like Whitmore, for instance, if you're dealing with this, and even if the horse hasn't had bleeding incidents, you know, in his history, and it doesn't have to be Whitmore, you know, per se that you address, but, you know, what, when confronted with this, Ron, what's your plan?
See, my thing is that I'll do what I think is best for the individual horse, whether it's Whitmore or any of them. I'll do what I'm always, my barn always makes fun of me and says I'm the most prepared, non-prepared person there ever was. I've got like 10 lists of things that I will do in this certain situation, you know. But the main thing is that I don't want people to fall into the bathtub remedies. I don't want, you know, I'm already getting emails and texts from people going, we've discovered an all-natural way to stop it. It guaranteed won't test, and it's a bleeder remedy. And this is the same kind of stuff that they were sending out about the things that Navarro and them were using. You know, and yep. All natural. I mean, well, cocaine's all natural, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of drugs that are all natural. But we don't want this to be to where we move from what was a shot given 4 hours administered only by a state commissioned vet, and to somebody that's going to try to treat it out of a bathtub remedy. We don't want that, and we don't want that to play out over a national stage. And I'm doing everything in my power to protect my horses at all times. And if it means running them certain areas or not running them certain areas, I do that. If it means not running them as often, then we will do that. And, you know, Brad's the same way as I do. He'll wake up every morning and he'll think, what's the best way to get this horse to the races soundly, happily? And then you do those things inside the rules of racing. And that's what we all, as a business and as trainers and owners, that's what we have to do. We just wake up every day knowing that the world changes overnight in our industry. You know, you can have a perfect plan laid out and then walk in there and you've got an abscess on a foot or something. So you have to be willing to change. And we can change and we can do whatever. My question is you haven't figured out a way to prevent the cheaters, the things that actually hurt our game. And you're masking us people that are using a regulated diuretic, basically a water pill, in the same breath as people that were knowingly taking an advantage against the rules. Yep. And I think that's a horrible thing to do to get what you want done.
Well, and they've been doing it.
I think, Ron,
they've been doing it for 10 years. And I've
been reading it. I kept thinking somebody's going to stand up. And, you know, it's not a popular stance because the breeders and the big agents and the big people that write the big stories, they're all on the other side. And it's, you know, so it does affect your business. When you stand up and you say the things that I say and you're willing to go to these meetings and go to these things and try to learn as much as you can about everybody's feelings on everything, you know, you figure out where you're at. And we're against it. We're against it here because the powers that be have been slandering this as a dope and drug for years. For more than 10 years, I've been hearing that Lasix is dope. Well, I mean, Lasix is the only thing legally administered within 24 hours, and it's given by a state-regulated, a state-commissioned veterinarian.
Yep.
And you can easily put water back in their system after the race, and if you want to give them electrolytes or minerals in a jug, you can do that. So I don't see the huge problem with something, you know, and I don't know about you. I've been heavy before. If you've been 10 pounds heavier and you go jogging, it feels a little different to your ankles and legs. You know what I mean? Anybody that's ever done sports can tell you, whenever you're lighter and you're not as overweight or heavy, it's easier for you to stay sound. And that was one of the things that I thought a lot of people missed the boat on whenever they said, well, your horses are running on Lasix. How do you even know that they were going to bleed? Well, I truly believe that you shouldn't give it unless the horse has shown it has bled. And then it's there as a seat belt. It's just there to make sure that if the circumstances present itself to bleed, that you are protected somewhat. But I also think that it's very, very helpful that they're not quite as heavy going around the turns and stuff as they are before. And the one other thing I want to talk about that's on my mind that I hear people talking about our sport, and they always say, well, horsemen didn't need it back in the 70s or didn't need it. We have no horsemen anymore. You know, that's another statement that I think is a very unfair statement. I think that what we have is technology. What we have is a way to scope and find out that we actually knew that more horses were bleeding than what we originally thought. And what we also have is a lot more testing than we had way back then. I remember when I first started in this game, I had my first runner, and it was a quarter horse, and a guy asked me, what's my bridle shot? And I was like, what? What do you mean, bridle shot? He goes, well, what do you give when you hang the bridle? And I said, well, nothing. He looked at me, and he said, you're a sweet kid, but you won't make it in this sport. Now, that's how it's changed. The game wasn't as clean as it is now, although we celebrate and freak out whenever we catch somebody, as we should. But I promise you, the sport was dirtier back then. But we're making it seem like we're a bunch of dopers because we want this drug. And then worse than that, you know, I'm getting off course, but the worst of that is saying that we think that this is the single biggest problem with our industry. And that we're going to use this. I mean, I think that if they would have talked to horsemen and said, hey, we want to do this, this, and this, and we want security, we want surveillance, we want pre-testing, we want better testing, we want harsher rules, we want to get the cheaters out of the game, we want to make it to where, you know, that the horse's safety is the most paramount thing, you would got everybody. But you went in there with this rules, this rule change thing, and you basically said, we're going to do some stuff that we haven't really gathered 100%. We don't know who we're going to put in charge. And, oh, by the way, first thing we're going to do is take away Lasix because we believe that's what's killing our sport. It's like, really? Did you ask anybody anything? And we don't have to agree. But if I tell you that I think it's good for a horse to be able to give a shot of Lasix and you can come back and treat it with however you want to, and you think not, well, you don't have to give it. But now you're enforcing your opinions on mine.
Ronnie, banging this for 10 years.
I would seriously believe that Lasix falls way under this stuff all started over the breakdown rash that we had and the unfortunate circumstances that went on in California and everywhere whenever we started getting outside pressure and they wanted to. But don't you think that
I mean, I don't know, would corrective surgeries done as weanlings maybe have more to do with that than a shot that makes you weigh less when you run? I mean, there's certain things I'm going, guys, there's a lot of stuff that we can regulate with 2-year-old and training cells. When you're going 9-3 unregulated, would that have something to do with the sport? Maybe the horse is not staying sound. You know, you blame it everything. And what do you do when you take that out and you still have this, and you still have, you know, the next time that something unfortunate happens, what are you going to blame it on then?
There'll be another specter, another culprit that'll be, you know, scapegoated. It's a very frustrating
I've had great conversations with people on both sides of the aisle, and I can tell you that for the most part, I believe that that everyone is coming from it from their own place of what they believe. I just think that we need more conversation. We need to rethink the priorities of our sport. The horse is the safety is by far the most important thing. And whenever you say safety, you got to say you want to, if I want to change my set list because I want to prevent the likelihood of a horse training over a bad track or whatever, then I'm going to make a decision that's best for my horse. I'm trying to do what's best for my horse every day. I just don't want it to, for people to say that if I'm using Lasix, then I'm trying to gain an advantage. I'm trying to protect my horse with what has been proven to be something that could lessen the risk of it hemorrhaging in its lungs. And we don't want that. Nobody wants that. I'm just not willing to risk it. And I just don't know what the end result is. Do you want us all to be a, I mean, I watched the stake race the other day in Europe, was really excited about seeing it, and I noticed that one trainer had 8 of the horses and the other one had 2. I'm like, where are the trainers? Why do we want to be like these people? Why do we want there to be 2 racing interests, or, you know, or 4 out of 15, 4 people have all the horses? I mean, that's not good for our sport. It's not. You're taking the hands out of, you're taking the day-to-day handling of the horses are being given to a very select few group of people. And that's something else I don't want to be like Europe.
Well, that topic, I mean, that feeds in, you know, that that may be part of the end goal here, frankly, Ron. I mean, there's a school of thought that says that the, you know, the objective here is to very much pare down and you know, reduce the industry to, you know, a handful of elite meets and a handful of elite breeders and owners. There's absolutely, I mean, this is a, from day one, I've said this. This is a class war. It's pure and simple a class war. There is a class of horsemen, a class of owner and bettors that another major portion of the industry would like to see eliminated. And they don't care who gets steamrolled in the process. Period. And let me tell you, they make themselves very evident. The one litmus test that you can see on Twitter is exactly which breeders are cheering loudly that their elite broodmare band will be it will be even made more precious by this process. And anybody that can't see what this is, it is, has got blinders on, period. So, Ronnie, I'm probably going to talk to you Monday, and because I think Whitmore runs them down on Saturday, and I got a couple of minutes here to close out, and there's a couple of actually late breaking stories I want to slip in. But I appreciate you being, you know, from the heart and laying it out for everybody, because, you know, I agree, and so many agree with, you know, the perspective you're offering.
There's great racing this weekend everywhere. Everybody go enjoy a horse doing what they love to do, and we'll see you guys next week.
Ron Moquette, everybody, and chances are Ron's back with me on Monday, frankly. We've got about 7-8 minutes. I've got Seth Merrow standing by, and Seth, as I mentioned, some late-breaking pieces of news. I retweeted from about 20 minutes ago, Jay Pribman, in conversation with Shug McGahey, greatest honor, is going to be sidelined for about 60 days, forcing him to miss the Triple Crown season. So feel badly for the horse and for Shug and for Don and Donna Adam to be this close. But they'll have him for the second half of the year.
Yeah, I kind of had whiff of that earlier, and so it wasn't a surprise when it came out. And yeah, maybe we'll get to look at him up at Saratoga. Who knows? But he goes to the sidelines, and after the weekend, it's just another one of those Triple Crown seasons that we've had over the past. You know, it's hard to judge last year; it was so different. But going back, the 4 or 5 years before that, it's just been marked by inconsistency. You have maybe one or two horses who kind of hold together throughout the season in some fashion. This year, it's obviously Essential Quality, maybe Concert Tour. But then you have a bunch of horses who will flash a big performance and then don't really validate it in the next race. And so it's a little bit of a guessing game when they come to the big race. And this year, the perfect example was Saturday's Wood Memorial, where the Logicals kind of didn't show up, and we had a couple of surprises. And so it's another, as they say, Kentucky Derby trail that kind of has fallen into place like this over the past 4 or 5 years.
Well, that news certainly will, will have a trickle down effect, and most immediately, there's, at least one beneficiary that is sort of on the border, a horse like Obisos and Dream Shake, etc., that are around the low 20s, or on my own list I've got him actually right at 20, Obisos. We also know that the horse that won the UAE Derby, Rebel's Romance, specifics from Godolphin, that they will bypass Derby, which was pretty much expected, but they're going to target the Belmont, actually. So that's nice to know. You could put Rebel's Romance down there. So, there's an official horse to cross out. And then there's expected ones like Wayburn and Crowded Trade, etc. So this will, this will play out over this weekend. I also, before we talk about Keeneland today and a couple of plays, Seth, word has come and is circulating that Alice Heedley Chandler has passed away. This came apparently on Monday, and the news and the obituaries are just hitting the trades. TDN with an extensive obit was the first one that I saw Chris McGrath writing. So our hearts go out to Doc and to Heedley and Patricia and Mike and Reynolds as well, and all the grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Just an absolute legend. If you missed our visit with Heedley Bell last year, this when his mother was honored, as part of the Hall of Fame, the founders wing. Very sad, but a life well lived. 95 years old, and really a matriarch of long standing, and a pillar of the turf, as they say. So Alice Heedley Chandler, gone. Seth, let's we got about two three minutes. Let's get a couple of plays in on Keeneland today.
I heard you talking earlier about that late pick four, and the interesting race to me is the kickoff, and I think you can play around in there and maybe get some prices if the morning line holds up the fifth race. And that's because I think you can maybe narrow down in the sixth. In the sixth, the four and the seven both look, that looks like the playable duo in the sixth race. So I play around in the fifth. I have a 3, 7, 5, and 8. The six is also interesting to me. But third draft from Shug, I think, comes in some good form and maybe primed for a nice effort. You're getting 7-2 there. Wolfbane has a bunch of winning siblings. Stew and Slew, Pola Queen, Violate, all nice winners. This one has had a couple of starts, hasn't gotten it done yet. But again, I think it's done in a fashion that lays a foundation to be primed today at 5-1. And perhaps tonight from Graham. Another one comes over from Europe. Ran fifth in the debut last July, and then came back and, was not necessarily an inspiring seventh, but it was a decent little closing effort off a long layup that I think the horse maybe can improve from. You're getting 10-1 there. So I think there's a few horses that maybe you can play around with in that fifth at Keeneland, 3, 7, 5, and 8 for me. And
well, let me slip a horse in the fifth, because I mentioned earlier in the show that I had a weirdo horse that intrigued me, and it's the 2, Kitsy. Kitsy scratched. Ugh,
yeah.
Boy, that sucks. All right, 20-1. I was really interested. That horse, that mare, the Dam, was a nice stakes mare on the grass, and I thought that that filly was very clever in there. Okay. That sucks. What else?
It happens to all of us.
Yeah. Anything else? I tell you, the seventh is a lot of fun. I picked Tuned the 3, but I think you got to use More Good Times from Maker, who's 10-1, and of course Chad's got that Pocket Square, the 11. But
the 13 gets in too, so I think you got to look at the Brad Cox horse on the outside.
Yep. Yeah. All right, and. We had Moquette, so I like Ike. I guess we got to like Ike a little in the in the nightcap. Seth, I appreciate it, and sorry to not be able to get to you sooner. I had some other stuff. We'll save it for next week.
Sounds good.
Seth Merrow, everybody, on your Capital OTB TV, which you can see on RTN anywhere in the country. You don't have to be limited to the Northeast or New York. Thanks to Seth and Ron Moquette and his frank take. Sid Fernando, Georgie Velasquez today, and Pete Fornatel. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.